Yes, Senator.
Of the council and serves as our staff member.
Welcome to everybody.
Thank you. I'm just going to give a few highlights, quickly go through the projects that are recommended to the legislature for passage today, and then let Dr. Kilgore fill in some other thoughts that he has to recommend this package to you. And I feel very, very good about this package that we're presenting to the Senate and the legislature. And I think, members, you'll be excited when you hear about what we're putting in front of you. We have a total of about 25 programs recommended, totaling almost $59 million. And of that, $4.386 million is recommended separately for the Conservation Partners Grant Program, which is something that we required in law to have small grants available for groups around the state. And the rest are programs that I'll go through. The Conservation Partners Grant Program has a separate process of RFP that is for those small grants. And out of the total receipts of the funds in 2011 fiscal year, we recommend setting aside 5% for a reserve in addition to last year's reserve. And we can talk about that whole reserve process if members would like, and what the long-term planning for that is. You'll see the council has put the followed the constitutional language in that the voters passed in the legacy amendment very, very closely, and all of the allocations fit into one of three categories: protect, restore, or enhance. And the categories, as enumerated in the Constitution, are prairies, wetlands, forests, and habitat in general for fish, game, and wildlife. And so if you want to break those down, as you can see in your packet, about 16,400 acres are being recommended for protection through either acquisition or easement, that is fee title acquisition or easement, over 42,000 for enhancement, and 4,709 acres for restoration. In the enhancement area, I think that's really important that we're focusing a lot on prairies this year, and that was one of the highlights of our funding criteria, to protect, enhance, and restore the prairies, which are have mostly vanished across our landscape, and we want to make it a priority to protect them as quickly as we can and restore what's left of them. And there's a lot of restoration here for existing state lands, for WMAs and SNAs in particular. And members, after this, assuming we still have time, we intend to hear the legislative auditor's report on land management. So it'll be a very timely combination of topics. A couple other things I wanted to comment on briefly. The programs are pretty widely distributed around the state. The metro area will receive 20% of the recommended dollars, which is a big jump from last year's package. And I want to just personally mention something that's very important to me. I'm very proud of the work that we did on the bill last year, and I wrote some language that I'm pretty attached to that set up a process of planning in the different ecological regions of the state. And I think that has been a really important part of the council's process. And if you look on that big map, you can kind of roughly see the five different it's down a little low, but there's the big northern region, there's the prairie region, there's the southeast region, there's the metro urbanizing region, and the last one is
southeast forest.
But I said that. Sorry, I think I said them all. Prairie forest transition. Okay, so you can look at it more closely if you like, and I think it's on your attachment as well. So you can sort of look at the big colorful blobs to get an idea of those boundaries. And these are the ecological regions as roughly established by the DNR, based on the differences in habitat in those different parts of the state. And I thought it was a really successful part of the council's process over the summer and fall, to set priorities for each region, for each of these ecological regions, based on the needs and the assets of those regions, the ecological needs and assets. And so I think that helped us make really a balanced and thoughtful set of recommendations based on the needs of different parts of the state. We received 42 proposals. And 26 of the highest scoring ones received hearings. And so the results are what you see here. And I think Dr. Kilgore may talk just a little bit more about how the process worked. But let me, would you like to do that now? Or
your call.
Why don't I just quickly go through the projects, and then I'll turn it over to Mike Kilgore for some more comments. If you turn to the bill, I'm just going to go quickly and name the different programs that we have in here for recommendation to you. First, accelerated prairie grassland restoration and enhancement.
Excuse me, Senator. I'm just going to tell you we have a quorum now. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
And this focuses primarily on native prairie vegetation enhancement, and it's primarily in southwest and southeastern Minnesota. And this is has it leverage with the National Wild Turkey Federation. Just wanted to mention that. Second, the Green Corridor Legacy Program is a series of primarily acquisitions along the Minnesota River area. And it will be primarily through WMAs, or I should say wildlife management areas and aquatic management areas. And it's a continuation of a successful project that we funded in 2010. Prairie Heritage Fund acquisition and restoration, which is a partnership with Pheasants Forever, will acquire and restore land to be added again to the state wildlife management area in the prairie areas. The Northern Tallgrass Prairie National Wildlife Refuge Protection Program is in partnership with the Nature Conservancy, and they will be acquiring land or permanent easements within the Northern Tallgrass Prairie Habitat Preservation Area, which is in western Minnesota, to be added to a National Wildlife Refuge. Again, another major prairie restoration initiative, and in partnership with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The next program or project is the Rum River Cedar Creek Initiative, and this is also a continuation. We started the process of funding this land acquisition last year, and this is the final installment. And it's a beautiful area at the confluence of the Rum River and Cedar Creek in Anoka County, which is critical in the metropolitan urbanizing area and a high-growth area that will provide access to outdoors and hunting and fishing opportunities in the metropolitan area. The Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project is a partnership with the Nature Conservancy, which will acquire, restore, and enhance prairie and prairie wetland habitat in western and southwestern Minnesota areas. The next category is the forest area, and this starts with the Critical Shoreline Habitat Protection Program, which is a partnership with the Minnesota Land Trust, which will acquire permanent conservation easements along critical pieces of shoreline in Kuchiching, Cook, Lake, and St. Louis County areas of northern forests. The next forestry program is specifically in Cass County, and it's aimed at protecting key sections of industrial forest land, kind of a mini version of what we did with the Blandin Legacy Project last year to identify critical areas and keep them in public, open to public access through acquisition. The next is the Little Nokasippi River Wildlife Management Area, which is within the boundaries of the ACUB program, the Camp Ripley land. There's a great deal of land around Camp Ripley that has a lot of wildlife assets, and this will work directly with them. Accelerated Forest Wildlife Habitat Program will acquire and restore and enhance state forest land habitat in SNAs and WMAs in northern and southeast forest regions. Northeastern Minnesota Sharp-tailed Grouse Habitat, a partnership with Pheasants Forever, which focuses on grouse habitat in northeastern Minnesota. And then the next category of, is in wetlands, accelerated shallow lake and wetland enhancement and restoration program, which will focus on shallow lakes and wetland habitats and includes stewardship for easements that are acquired so that there will be a plan in place to maintain the improvements on these lands. And this is a partnership between the DNR and Ducks Unlimited. And includes an it's accelerating our efforts at prairie pothole recovery areas. The next program is titled Accelerating the Waterfowl Production Area Program in Minnesota, and this is a partnership with Pheasants Forever and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Ducks Unlimited to create waterfowl production areas. Next is the RIM Wetlands Reserve Program, which we've all heard a lot about RIM in the past. It's really been the premier wetlands restoration program on private lands in the nation and leverages an enormous amount of federal dollars. And the anticipated leverage for this investment of $6.895 million is somewhere between $25 and $50 million. And it kind of depends. Anticipated leverage, 25 to 50. In hand, leverage, $9.6 million. But there's a second round if other states don't use the money, so I think we can get more on top of that. Is that how that
works? Correct.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson, but most of these projects are, the money's leveraged, is it not?
Absolutely. I didn't even talk about the leverage. And there, if you see on the first handout, there's for every dollar, Lassard Sams or Heritage Council dollars leverages 63 cents in matching funds throughout as an average. So there's a great deal of leveraging opportunities that we've taken advantage of. Under Habitat, General Habitat Programs, Metro Big Rivers Habitat Program, and this will focus on the big rivers that converge in the metropolitan area, the Minnesota, the St. Croix, and the Mississippi River. And it works with a large number of local partners on protecting, restoring, and enhancing areas along those rivers that are critical for habitat protection. Accelerated aquatic management area acquisition, and this is something we've heard a lot about, the importance of AMAs statewide. Coldwater River and Stream Restoration Protection and Enhancement, which focuses on trout streams in particular and partners with Minnesota Trout Unlimited. Dakota County has a specific riparian and lakeshore protection and restoration program that is recommended for funding, and it's this receives a lot of leverage from Dakota County's bond for open space that they have already passed. The Valley Creek Protection Partnership protects areas around the Valley Creek in Washington County, which I believe is a tributary of the St. Croix River, and really important areas in with a lot of development surrounding it that will be protected, enhanced, and restored. And again, there's a Washington County bond initiative that hopefully this will leverage as well. Anoka Sandplain Restoration and Enhancement. And this is in a number of northern metro counties to restore and enhance habitat on those areas in the Anoka Sand Plain. This is a partnership with Great River Greening, which brings in many, many, many volunteers and many volunteer hours. And it's an area of outstanding biological diversity that deserves a lot of attention in the metropolitan area. The Lower Mississippi River Habitat Restoration Acceleration relates to tributaries of along the Mississippi River in southeastern Minnesota and critical floodplain areas, and specifically focused on acquiring land along the Root River watershed. The Washington County St. Croix River Land Protection is for permanent easements along the St. Croix River in Washington County, and again, we'll partner with Washington County and their support for their local initiative for the outdoors. And then finally, we have the Conservation Partners Grant Program, which I mentioned earlier. We've set aside $4.386 million for 2011. And maybe Mr. Becker or Mr. Kilgore could talk about the schedule for that grant program, because I don't know that off the top of my head, when the next round is. And that's really all I wanted to say, and let me turn it over next to Dr. Kilgore.
Dr. Kilgore.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you, Senator Anderson. As Senator Anderson indicated, I'm the chair.
Dr. Kilgore, I think for the purposes of the tape, would you identify yourself?
Yes.
We know who you are.
My name is Mike Kilgore. I'm the chair. I have the pleasure to chair the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, and I just want to state what a privilege it is to serve with the other 11 council members, and in particular, I'm appointed by the Senate Majority Leader, as is Les Bench, and I just want to say on the record how appreciative we are of the support and the leadership provided by Senator Anderson and Senator Ingebrigtsen on the council. It's been very, very helpful. I don't want to belabor the points that Senator Anderson raised, but I do want to just let you know that the package in front of you is the culmination of a lot of work by the council and staff over this past summer. As indicated on the map, we broke the state into habitat sections, 5 of them. We reviewed over 30 habitat resource-specific plans as staff, and working with the Management Analysis Division, we convened meetings to bring together the state's best scientists and natural resource managers throughout the state, as well as the public, to get input on what are the habitat needs, what are the priorities, what sort of funding needs are out there. Council spent a considerable amount of time poring over that data. In a 2-day session this past September, we identified priority habitat needs in each one of those 5 sections. They're fairly specific. You can take a look at them. There's probably 3 to 5 priority needs in each of those that the council has identified for this call. So what you see before you is really the result of a very targeted and, I believe, a strategic strategy to focus on some of the highest priority needs in the state, whether they be terrestrial or aquatic. With that, Mr. Chair, I would either turn it back to Senator Anderson or to Mr. Becker.
Go ahead, Senator Anderson. Mr. Becker, do you have some comments you'd like to make?
Mr. Chair, I'm
yes,
Bill
sir.
Becker. I'm the Executive Director of the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. I just want to say that this particular round has been gratifying to work with this council, working hard to cast the net wide and delve deeply into the individual programs, and I think that this is a very fine package before you.
Yes. And, Mr. Chair, yeah, just to remind members, the first round was during the legislative session last winter under a very, very compressed timeline. And for the second round of funding, there was the opportunity to really take some time to do some planning, to do some outreach, to go around the state and take input. And that will continue as the council's moving forward with making their 25-year strategic plan, as we've required by law, and that is moving forward in over the next few months.
So, Senator Anderson, you're in the process of your third round now, or
has
that started yet?
That will begin in the spring.
Okay.
So those discussions are just beginning now to set up the next RFP. Mr. Chair, I do have a technical amendment, the A-10-2077 amendment.
Senator Anderson moves the A-10-2077 amendment. Is there any discussion on that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll just explain this. This
okay.
relates again to the Minnesota Conservation Corps changing their name, so we just have to
okay.
be sure we reference.
Thank you, Senator. Any discussion on it? Any response? If not, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
And, Mr. Chair, just one other point I wanted to make. I mentioned the conservation grant program, and that, as I said, is on a separate grant schedule and a separate RFP schedule, and that those grants will go out. The next round is in next July.
Would Senator Anderson, would anybody want to say anything about that specifically? You said that maybe Dr. Kilgore might want to make a few comments on those grants.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. The small grants program is a very important program as part of the Outdoor Heritage Fund. What it does is it provides an opportunity for locally based conservation efforts. It could be rod and gun clubs. It could be chapters of conservation sporting groups. But it gives them an opportunity to compete through leveraged dollars to do habitat work that's very local. And I think one of the great side benefits of this Conservation Partners Program is the fact that it engages conservation at a very local level. It's not just decisions made in St. Paul, but it's the ability of, you know, Renville County Rod and Gun Club to be active, to have a great idea. All they need is some funding to help carry out a restoration or an enhancement project. This provides them the opportunity to do that type of work.
Sounds good. Senator Anderson, the discussion that's come through the press and such is that on the two major purchases that you've been making, whether it be conservation easements or fee purchase, there's always some question about PILT, in other words, taking these lands off the tax rolls. So that's one question. The second question that seems to be coming up is the management of those easements. Maybe one of the three of you want to address that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's a very important point. One thing you will note in this bill is that for any acquisition, whether it be in fee or permanent conservation easement, where needed, there is dollars for restoration of that habitat. So whether it be a WRP rim easement where the land is going to be, you know, the tile might be broken up or ditch plugged or whatever to convert that cropland back to a wetland and surrounding grassland, funds are in this bill to do that work. We also have some very stringent requirements of all the recipients of this money, should the legislature appropriate the money, to lay out a long-term habitat management plan for that property, as well as how that will be financed. So we have a lot of the details in the latter part of the bill requirements, so that it's not just, if it is an acquisition, purchasing or purchasing the right, but to convert that to a quality habitat state and to lay out, in fact, how that habitat will be maintained and the financing of that habitat over the long run.
Mr. Chair, the only thing I would add, I mean, if you look at the overall PILT obligation or liability that would come from the acquisitions through fee title in this bill, it's roughly somewhere between $120,000 to $160,000 of additional PILT per year from this package. And members, I think the other day when we just approved Senator Bach's amendment, we just added that much on in a one fell swoop, so something like that.
Okay.
So it's not, if you put it in that context, we just...
And then what about the difficulty, how we're going to manage the additional conservation easements? I think probably the legislative auditor may have something to report on that, but from this point forward, what are we thinking about?
Well, as Dr. Kilgore said, we've made that a priority, there's a plan for restoration that goes along with any land that's acquired or any conservation easement that's acquired. That's a requirement.
So Senator Anderson, what you're saying is that you will, and the DNR and those people who are in charge of it will be taking care of those easements if it hasn't necessarily been done in the past.
Well, in addition, we're funding restoration and enhancement on existing state lands, on existing scientific and natural areas, wildlife management areas. We are funding that restoration as a separate program in addition. So we're adding to the number of acres in the state that are managed in terms of the land being restored and in good shape. And so we're helping with that process of dealing with the backlog of lands that are just sitting in public ownership without really any restoration going on. $750,000 into stewardship.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, in the Major Forest Legacy, there is $750,000 set aside for stewardship by the Department of Natural Resources so that they can inspect, work with the landowner, things of that sort, to ensure that the land is in the intended use.
So, Mr. Chair, we're not solving all the problems that we're going to hear about in the legislative auditor's report with all that land that needs attention, but we're making a dent in it, and we're certainly not making it worse.
You've got a plan, as you
said. We have
a
plan.
Same part of it, yeah. Questions? Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Becker, or Dr. Kilgore, last round of funding in this, we had a signature project that we were able to point to that where we could tell people this is where the money went. Not all of it, but the fact that we bought a 200,000-acre forest is a big deal. Not have been able to do it without this fund. What are the one, two, or three signature items that we will be purchasing with this money this year that I can tell people this is what we, this is a big deal thing that we did with your money? We bought X number of shallow lakes. We restored X acres of wetlands. Can you talk about that at all? Not in dollar amounts or programs, but the end results.
Well, Dr. Kilgore, the marquee.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Senator Chaudhry, if I had to describe one marquee, and it transcends a number of the projects, it builds on what Senator Anderson said, and that is that we really have tried to address the backlog of habitat that the state currently owns through its wildlife management areas, aquatic management areas, scientific and natural areas. You know, if you look at the number of acres that we are recommending be affected through either a prescribed burn, it could be removal of woody cover if it's a prairie, WMA or SNA, that really is a major step forward. We're talking, over 40,000 acres of work, habitat enhancement work on existing state assets. To me, that's a major step forward. Beyond that, so that transcends many recommendations. But the things, Senator, that you ticked off, the shallow lakes, the cold water streams, the protecting the remnant native prairies, the restoration of wetlands and adjacent upland complexes, those are all the types of things that we think are really going to move the state forward in terms of habitat.
And, Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
I think that was a great answer and a good list, and I would add one thing to that, and that is a focus on our Great Rivers of Minnesota and the habitat that surrounds those. And so that was a focus, not just, in the metropolitan area where the three big rivers converge, but also on the lower Mississippi River. And I think that's really exciting.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Kilgore, we are restoring 40,000 acres. Restoring or enhancing 40,000 acres. Yeah. And how many shallow lakes are we protecting or enhancing? Restoring.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I believe that is 8 additional lakes. It could be between 8 and 11. Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, that's my recollection.
Okay.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, we can get those numbers compiled in that fashion and get those to you quickly.
We bought about 10 more shallow lakes, restored 40,000 acres. And then there's one specific thing wondering about on, how many acres or how many wildlife waterfowl production areas are we buying out of the $3.5 million?
Mr. Baker?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I don't have the exact number on my tip of my tongue. I looked at the list as it's listed on the map there, and it's in the order of 24.
Okay. So, and that would be, Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, purchasing or enhancing or a mix?
It's a mix, but it's primarily protecting.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, I have always known what protecting means, but apparently there's some confusion. Does protecting mean purchasing?
Mr. Chair, in this case, Senator Chaudhry, yes.
Thank you. Good work.
Other questions?
Chairman,
Senator Fredericks?
I have one quick amendment, if I may.
Just
stylistic.
Senator Fredrickson.
Page 14, line 4, delete paid for and insert funded. Just a word preference. I think it reads better.
I'm sorry, can you say the line again?
Chairman, Senator Anderson, page 14, line 4, delete paid for and insert funded.
Senator Fredrickson moves that on line 14.4 that paid for is deleted and the word funded inserted. Is there any discussion on that? not, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So be it. Anything else? Any other discussion? Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kilgore, that it looks like we're acquiring about 8,700 acres. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, that's correct.
And how is that kind of distributed around the state?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, fairly widely distributed, largely in the prairie. I don't want to say exclusively, but if you look at that area, the vast majority of it is in the prairie and, to a lesser extent, the prairie transition area. There are a couple of parcels that will be for sharptail habitat in the northern Kennebec, southern Aiken, I believe western Pine County, but the lion's share is in the prairie and the prairie transition area.
If you look your map on the second page.
Dr. Kilgore, what's the dot on Lake Vermilion?
Dr. Kilgore.
Looks quite a ways away from the park.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, that's my favorite fishing spot. I believe it is one of the protected shoreline areas that will be affected through the Minnesota Land Trust recommendation. Is that right, Mr. Becker?
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, I hate to contradict my chair, but it's an aquatic management area acquisition. I was curious, too.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Becker, who owns it today?
It's privately owned.
You know,
Senator Bach.
Is it Lakeshore?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, yes.
I just want to raise that because Lakeshore on Lake Vermilion sells for about $2,000 a foot. So when we start acquiring land that expensive, we just got to remember there is a significant pilt cost to that, and we're going to hear about that a little bit later today.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach.
Mr. Becker.
I appreciate your point. It's well taken. This happens to be an easement acquisition, so there's no build consequence.
That's helpful.
Mr. Chair, Senator,
Senator Anderson.
I don't think you were in the room when I made my comment, my rather flippant comment, that the amount of pilt obligation for this bill is somewhere between $120,000 to $160,000 a year, which I don't think is much more than your amendment that passed the other day. So that was the part you missed.
Senator Bach. Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I think the point is we just need to score it everywhere.
Absolutely.
We cannot ignore pilt on one bill and then score it on somebody else's bill. That's all. I mean, if that's what it is, that's what it is. But we all just need to be honest about recognizing there's a cost to the general fund when we do this.
Right. Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, I think you're right. In some cases, the lands aren't identified yet, so it's hard. But in some cases, they are. So this is an estimate at this point.
Other comments, questions from the committee? Any comments from the general public? If not, Senator Anderson, what would you like to do with the bill?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that Senate File 2564 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the full Finance Committee.
Senator Anderson moves that Senate File 2564 as amended be passed and sent to the full Finance Committee. Any discussion? If not, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Going to the Finance Committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Anderson.
You want to get started, Senator Saxog, with the next part of the agenda? Thank you.
I agree with you. It's just its priorities are way out of whack.
Focus, doesn't it?
Next, we have a presentation by the Office of the Legislative Auditor. Mr. Nobles, we look forward to having you here and hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. And as we get our projector set up, let me say, first of all, that John Yunker was the manager of our evaluation. And also on the evaluation team was Carrie Marhoff, who is doing double duty by trying to get this projector ready for us. Well, Mr. Chairman, as we have presented this report to various legislative committees, I've had a few comments to make that are just a preface, but frankly, really unnecessary, because I think you all have really said what I was going to say, and that is that there are really significant benefits to the state owning some natural resource land and purchasing some conservation easements. Those benefits to the people extend across a wide range of activities, including hunting, fishing, boating, canoeing, hiking, camping, picnicking, rock climbing, trail riding, and just a host of other things that we could probably all enumerate.
Skiing,
absolutely. But I think one of the things that we really treasure about those benefits are that it's typically things that people don't necessarily do alone, although they can. They're usually family activities as well. But state ownership of land and easements also helps, as we just heard, protect and conserve habitat, endangered species, and just the simple beauty of Minnesota's landscape. And in some cases, state ownership of land actually produces revenue for the state treasury and for local units of government. But as was also just said, these benefits do cost money, and those costs extend far beyond the initial purchase price. And I think we are coming to a point, both with the work that this committee is doing and its comparable committee in the House, and with this report, to better understand that those costs extend sometimes for many years. Because the state of Minnesota doesn't own a large portfolio of land and easements just for the sake of saying we own something. We want to do something with it. We have programs associated with that land and those easements. All of the things that I just enumerated related to our forests and parks and trails and water access, all of those things. And so I think it's good that we're coming to a point to a greater recognition of those costs. And one of those costs, Senator Bach also pointed to, and that is the PILT payments. So all of these things add up to some amount of controversy about the costs of all of these good benefits that we want to achieve. And so the Legislative Audit Commission was asked to authorize an evaluation by the Office of the Legislative Auditor of some of these issues. Now, as you all well know, there are many, many issues associated with the state ownership of natural resource land and the purchase of easements on private land. And we didn't cover all of them, but I think we covered some of the particularly significant and controversial ones, and John Yunker is going to go through those with you. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd like to move immediately to Mr. Yunker, who will give you a brief presentation of our findings and recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Knowles. Mr. Yunker, please identify yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm John Yunker from the Legislative Auditor's Office. I'm going to try to move, in the interest of time, move kind of quickly through the slideshow presentation, leave you some time for questions. But I'm first going to try to highlight what some of the key findings were, and then give you a little background about state-owned land, and then we'll get into the findings in more detail. We basically looked at four different issues in this study. One had to do with what DNR was doing to more strategically manage its existing land holdings and reevaluate whether or not they were continued to be good land to hold on to for conservation, recreation, or other purposes. And what we found in that area was that DNR has made some efforts to more strategically evaluate its land holdings, but we felt that there were more work that was needed to be done. We also looked at easement management, both at DNR and at the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And what we found is that Bowser has a comprehensive management easement program, but DNR lacks that comprehensive management easement program. They haven't done enough over the years to manage the easements, to determine what is the condition of the easement properties when they first purchased the easements, and to monitor them for compliance with easement agreements over time. However, DNR is in the process of developing that sort of policy. They got a grant that came through the legislature, through LCCMR, to inventory all of their easements and to develop these kinds of policies. So there's work being done in that area. The third issue that we looked at in this report was a key issue in light of all of the interest in acquiring more land and the fact that we already have, as I'm going to show you, 5.6 million acres of land that DNR already manages. What we found was that DNR appears to lack adequate resources to manage and maintain existing land. And I'll talk more in detail later about that finding. And finally, we were asked to look at the issue of payments in lieu of taxes, which really could have been a study of its own. And what we found was that the adequacy, we were asked to look at the question of, is PILT the right amount? Is it adequate for local governments? as some sort of reimbursement for the fiscal effects of state land ownership? Is it more than adequate? Is it less than adequate? How does it compare? The problem is that there really is no standard and statute to compare it to, and so it became very difficult to assess the overall adequacy of PILT. We did do a comparison that looked at for a particular type of land that is non-acquired hunting land, we looked at how PILT performed in terms of replacing the property tax revenue lost when that land is acquired. And what we found is that the PILT was well in excess of lost property tax revenue for newly acquired non-hunting land. As I kind of alluded to before, DNR manages.
Excuse me, Mr. Yunker. Senator Bach, do you have a question?
Mike, the category was acquired non-hunting land. So is that like state park acquisitions?
We can get into, Mr. Chairman and Senator Bach, I'll try to get into that in more detail, but it would not be wildlife management areas because that would be the acquired hunting land. It would be anything else that DNR acquired that was not on the tax rolls when it was acquired. School trust fund land is not acquired land because it was not on the trust fund land. Some CONCON land, by determination of the legislature, is acquired. Some is not. So it gets rather detailed.
Special type of
but it would include park land as well as a number of other areas. It's kind of everything else that was acquired that was on the tax rolls except for wildlife management areas. In terms of natural resource land, there are about 8.4 million acres of natural resource land that is state-owned in Minnesota. That's about one-sixth of the land in the state. That includes 5.6 million acres that are under DNR management. It's typically what you think of when you think of the DNR's land. It also includes 2.8 million acres of primarily forest land that is tax-forfeited land held. It's owned by the state, held in trust for local governments, and it's primarily managed by the counties. And actually, DNR has little to do with that land. I think the deeds and all the paperwork is held by the Department of Revenue. If you look at the DNR land, that's the 5.6 million acres. Two-thirds of it is forests. Almost a quarter is wildlife management areas or other wildlife areas. And then parks and recreation areas, scientific and natural areas, trails, water access sites, aquatic management areas, that accounts for the other 8%. You can also look at the DNR land and see what kind of land it is. 45% of the land that DNR owns is school trust fund land. This is land that was what's left of the land that was given to the state by the federal government back in the 19th century around the time of statehood. Another 28% of the land is consolidated conservation lands, or CONCON lands. These are lands that were tax forfeited. They exist in seven counties in Minnesota. They were tax forfeited. The counties tried to make them productive lands, productive agricultural lands primarily, by draining them. They issued bonds to do that draining. What happened was is they were unsuccessful in making them productive or marketing them, and they were defaulting on the bonds. And a couple counties were actually in danger of bankruptcy. A deal was struck whereby the state took over the lands in the 1920s and 1930s in return for taking over the bond payments. And the state actually, on CONCON lands, distributes a portion of the income earned on those lands back to the local governments. About 25% of the lands are considered acquired lands, but just to caution Senator Bach and others, this is a different definition than is used for PILT. With PILT, the definition of acquired is that it was taken off the tax rolls at the time it was acquired, and this might include other properties as well. That's the land that DNR currently manages. DNR does have long-range plans that either it or citizen advisory groups have developed that talk about significant acquisitions of state land. You can just see here what kind of percentage increase we're talking about. Sometimes it's stated in terms of acres, sometimes in terms of the number of sites or the number of miles of shoreline. In other words, there are a lot of expectations about acquiring more land that are in DNR's long-range plans. And also the legacy amendment that was passed in 2008 by the voters has increased expectations about how much land the state would acquire. If you look at how much it has acquired, or DNR has acquired, over the last 20 years, it's actually been rather modest. There's been about a 5% growth in the amount of land that DNR manages. Most of the growth has been in wildlife management areas, in scientific and natural areas, and in parks. The tax-forfeited land that I talked about, that's the land managed by the counties, there's actually been little change in the number of acres of that land over the last 20 years. As you know, there are pressures on DNR to both acquire land and acquire easements for a variety of very useful purposes, but there also have been, from time to time, pressures on DNR to sell or exchange land and to make changes in their land holdings. There were a number of things passed by the 2003, number of requirements passed by the 2003-2005 legislatures that required state agencies, including DNR, to sell land. Counties have raised concerns about the fiscal impacts of state land ownership, and a number of counties have passed resolutions that ask that there be no net increase in public land ownership in their counties. That includes not just state-owned land, but also federally owned land. I'm going to try to go through these slides rather quickly so we can get to the PILT and the resource question. But we think that DNR has made some efforts to try to evaluate their land holdings more strategically. We don't think that that work is complete. We do think there are other issues that need to be addressed. I'm going to talk a little bit about conservation easements. The main purpose of conservation easements are to preserve land by limiting certain development or other rights of a private landowner. The easement may also provide access to the public in some instances for the purpose of recreation. Or other purposes. And when you have an easement, you really need to do initial and ongoing diligence in order to protect the public's investment. And that means you maintain if you're a public agency, you maintain an inventory of easements. You do baseline reports that document the condition of the property when the easement is purchased. And then you do periodic monitoring and enforcement. And as I said before, Bowser has a comprehensive program. DNR does not currently. It has managed some easements better than others. And DNR is, with help from the LCCMR grant, is compiling an inventory and trying to develop a policy for baseline reports and monitoring. This is the third issue I said we addressed in the report. It's the issue of, is there adequate funding for existing management of existing DNR lands? And what we conclude in our report is that DNR appears to lack adequate resources to manage and maintain existing land holdings. The deficiencies include a backlog of development work, deferred rehabilitation work, and they include inadequate funding for periodic maintenance or operations. It wasn't possible for us to quantify the overall extent of the shortfalls. We do provide information, and I'm going to show you in just a minute some of the examples of the shortfalls. But what we found was that for scientific and natural areas, there was a backlog of $7.5 million in work that needed to be done. For parks, $54 million in deferred rehabilitation. For trails, $32 million in deferred rehabilitation. Similarly, it's $36 million for water access sites and fishing piers. And there are some needs also in the forestry area, even beyond what I've listed here. I would add to that in the easement area, because I think it came up during your earlier discussion of the Outdoor Heritage Bill, that there are going to be some needs if DNR is going to do better easement management for additional funding in that area as well. What we recommend in this report is that DNR should prepare long-range budget analyses that compare its ongoing funding needs to existing funding levels. This was done most recently for parks and trails. It was required by the 2009 legislature that DNR develop a long-range budget analysis for parks, state parks and state trails, and to compare its ongoing funding needs to existing funding levels. And what that analysis showed, it highlighted the deferred maintenance, deferred rehabilitation that needed to be done in the parks, and it also highlighted the fact that the department was estimating that its needs were about $6 million per year higher than what their available funding was, even when considering the money that it got last year from the Parks and Trails Fund, which is part of the legacy amendment. We think that ultimately the legislature should review these analyses and particularly review how DNR is defining its needs. I think there are some things that may be more wants than needs, and they need to be sorted out in the process. And finally, we think that there's more fundamental work that needs to be done with wildlife management areas. At the department level or at the division level, we don't think that DNR has a management information system that gives them good information about what the condition of their wildlife management areas are or what it takes to keep them in good condition over time. So they don't have a good management information system that tells what their needs are. And so it's going to be a little more difficult in this area to do a long-range budget analysis immediately. We think that these long-range budget analyses will help the legislature better understand the ongoing costs of land ownership, and it'll help the legislature balance funding for acquisitions with funding for ongoing management and maintenance. I'd like to talk a little bit about PILT, and I'm going to spend a little more time with PILT because I think it's an important issue. As I said, it's almost a study in and of itself. PILT payments in 2009 were about $22 million. For the most part, they're distributed to counties and townships. But one big exception to that is that for acquired hunting lands, that's WMAs that are acquired, lands that are acquired off the tax rolls, they're distributed because it's based on an older law, older than the 1979 PILT law. They're distributed to counties, townships, and school districts. The payment rates for PILT are quite variable. They're the highest for acquired lands, lands that were on the tax rolls, and for certain CONCON lands. In particular, they're higher for the CONCON lands that are in state parks, that are in WMAs, and are in scientific and natural areas. And here's a kind of a quick list of what the PILT rates are. For DNR acquired land, they're the greater of $5.11 per acre or 0.75% of the appraised value of the property. In 74 counties, the valuation method is used because that's higher. In 13 counties, the $5.11 per acre is used because that's the higher figure. But if you're talking about other DNR land, school trust fund land, the other CONCON lands, any land that was not taken off the tax rolls when it was acquired by the state, that only receives 64 cents per acre. And the argument there for a lower payment is that it wasn't taken off the tax rolls. You're not trying to replace the property tax revenues lost because they weren't lost. They were never levied on that property, and that maybe what you're trying to do is pay for some of the costs of local governments providing services to land, and that could include road and bridge costs. It could include emergency services, police services, sheriff services, etc. The county tax forfeited land, the land that the counties manage, receives $1.28 per acre, but keep in mind, too, that the counties can make money managing that land. It's largely managed for timber, and so they'd also be earning timber revenues off of that land. I would direct you to page 61 in the report if you have that in front of you, because I don't have it up here as a slide, but it kind of gives you a quick depiction of how pilt payments have or have not kept up with inflation since 1980. 1980 was when the Maine pilt statute came into effect, but there was pilt prior to that for hunting lands, for acquired hunting lands. If you look at the pilt payments, they did not keep up with inflation between 1980 and the year 2000, but pilt has tripled since 2000, primarily due to some legislative changes, and one of those legislative changes was to introduce the valuation formula for acquired land. And when that was introduced and we had a significant growth in land values, that increased the pilt payments as well. So most people look at, well, pilt has really tripled since 2000. It's growing fast. It's a cause for concern. But if you look at the longer history, it for many years trailed behind inflation. If you look today and compare back to the year 1980, 2009 pilt per acre is about 30% higher than 1980 pilt per acre adjusted for inflation. So we've more than made up for what we were not keeping up for inflation through 2000. The problem is we haven't done that for some kinds of land. So pilt for some counties has not kept up with inflation because the main benefactor of the changes, benefactors of the changes in the pilt formula have been those counties with acquired land. Those counties that primarily have school trust fund land or other land that receives 64 cents an acre or $1.28 per acre, they haven't done as well, and their payments may not have kept up with inflation. As I mentioned before, we were asked, is pilt adequate? Is it more than adequate? Is it less than adequate? And as I said, there is a problem here in trying to address that question because state law doesn't provide much guidance on the purpose of pilt. You could probably guess that pilt is supposed to offset the fiscal impacts of state land ownership on local government. But what are those fiscal impacts, and how do they apply to different types of land? So we look in the report as to what some of those fiscal impacts are, and some of these are probably more applicable to certain types of land and not to others. But the legislature has not defined what the purpose of pilt is. So let me just go through a couple of these. If you know, one of the fiscal impacts might be the lost property tax revenues on land. And that's probably most relevant for acquired land because that is land that was taken off the tax rolls. As I said before, the cost of government services might be more relevant to land that was not taken off the tax rolls, school trust fund land, for example. There are also other fiscal impacts. I'm not going to go into detail at this time, but it is true that for counties and cities and school districts, that to some extent, if land is taken off the tax rolls, that can affect their state aids and increase their state aids somewhat, and the report goes into a bit of detail about that. There are some other difficulties in trying to assess the adequacy of pilt because it's not clear how you measure those government costs. If you're trying to look at non-acquired land and you're trying to measure what the costs of government services are, well, what are those government services and with what regularity do they occur and how much do they cost? That can vary significantly around the state and by type of property. And it also might be very difficult to measure. So we didn't try to get into that in this report. What we did do was do a comparison for non-hunting acquired land, and we compared the pilt to estimated taxes lost when the property was acquired.
Excuse me, Mr. Younger. Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Chair, could you help me understand what is non-acquired land? One of your previous slides, you had it listed as non-acquired land.
Mr. Younger.
I'm not Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, I'm not finding the slide, but acquired land for PILT purposes would be land taken off the tax rolls.
Slide 19. PILT for some counties has not kept up with inflation because they primarily contain non-acquired land.
County tax forfeit.
Those would be counties, Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, those would be counties that have primarily this category of either other DNR-administered state land that gets the 64 cents per acre, would be school trust fund land, would be forested Concon lands, or it could also include the tax-forfeited land that gets $1.28 per acre.
I see.
If you look at newly acquired land and compare the PILT for that to county town taxes, and this is newly acquired non-hunting land, because keep in mind, again, non-hunting land PILT is distributed to counties and towns. Acquired hunting land PILT is distributed to counties, towns, and school districts, so a different kind of comparison is in order if you're going to make one comparison or the other. And I'm going to talk in a minute about should we be paying PILT to school districts? And that's a much more involved and complex issue. So we're just looking at the acquired non-hunting land that's only PILT is only going to counties and towns. The PILT for that, we estimate, is about 64% higher than county town taxes. That's a statewide average. It's actually an average of county averages. And the important point is it's not going to be the case all over the state. You know, in one township or one county, the number might be higher than 64%. And in another township or county, it could be significantly less than 64%. This is a statewide average.
Senator Bach has a question.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Yonker, I'm just thinking about the north shore of Lake Superior, who I represent. I don't know if we have 7 or 8 state parks. And I would argue that there's no way that PILT will ever reimburse Lake or Cook County for the lost value had that property ever been developed. I mean, do we take into consideration anything for the lost development that would have happened on that land? I understand it maybe compensating at $7 an acre or whatever it is on 40 acres, that's $280. I get that. But can you imagine the property tax revenue that some of that parkland on the shore of Lake Superior would bring in if it was developed into condominiums? And I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying it's much like the discussion we had about Vermilion. I mean, there is some cost in lost development rights that are extraordinary in the lake region of the state. And I think some of my county commissioners were down here from Lake County just about a week ago, less 10 days ago. And at Split Rock Lighthouse, the state is wanting to is negotiating with the county for 80 acres of land that's across the highway from Split Rock Lighthouse State Park. And the state wants to put in there an RV campground. Now, that's county tax forfeited land. The county has the authority to put that up a public auction and sell those 80 acres. You can only imagine what a developer might build there if that 80 acres was sold overlooking Lake Superior and Split Rock Lighthouse State Park. Now, the PILT on that is $1.28 per acre on county tax forfeited land. That's $102 a year that the county gets for that 80 acres. Now, once it goes over to the state and the state decides to build an RV campground there, I'm assuming they'll negotiate some kind of an arrangement with Lake County, but I know my Lake County commissioners were not very happy when they were down here recently and how the discussions were going with DNR. But, I mean, I think one of the shortcomings is when we say some counties are on acquired non-hunting land are receiving more money than they're entitled to is the issue of the development rights that were given up. And I'm not at all advocating that we do that on the shore of Lake Superior. I love those parks. I've been to every single one of them. Everyone in Minnesota loves them. But to say that somehow Lake County, where 84% of all the land in the county is publicly owned, and Cook County, where the government owns 91% of all the land, that somehow those counties are cutting a fat hog because they're getting more pilt than they should. And, Mr. Yonker, you didn't say that. I realize you said there are places in the state where it's different. I just would argue on the north shore of Lake Superior, they are severely being undercompensated for what the value of that land would have been had it been developed. And I'll say it again. I'm not advocating it be developed. I don't want that to happen. But I just think in the case of the most recent situation at Split Rock Lighthouse, if the state wants to take 80 acres and build an RV campground, the county is giving up 80 acres that could have generated significant tax capacity for that county. They're going to try to run another excess operating levy referendum for their school this fall. I don't even know. I lost count how many have failed. They're one of the school districts in the state that have zero voter-approved levy on their school because they have nothing to tax. I mean, the government already owns all the land. So as we head down the road of relying on voter-approved levies to fund our schools, some of these kind of issues like public lands have a big impact on educational opportunities in some places in the state, and I just wanted to raise that. This is I support public land. I mean, I play on it like almost everybody that lives in northern Minnesota, but if we all think that's a good idea, we got to help some of these areas of the state that have a lot of it so that they can maintain things like schools. And Cook County, same thing, zero voter-approved levy. They've tried multiple times. They can't pass one. They don't have anything left to tax because we won't even allow. The other thing they have in addition to public land is cabins. Well, guess what? We don't allow them to tax cabins for their schools either. So there's virtually nothing left except a few homesteads, and there aren't that many of them. How's that, Mr. Chairman?
That's good, Senator Chaudhry.
You know, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with probably 90% of what you said.
9 or 90?
90. 90. Because I think you're right. I think it's fair to compensate for what that property tax value would have been, particularly since we have this reliance on property tax, which I personally oppose. For funding so many things, and it's just been growing and growing. And I think you're right. And I don't think, I do not for one second draw a conclusion that any county is getting rich because they may have 5% over what they might have gotten out of property taxes, some of these counties. That's not fatting the hog. In fact, I am one who would want to increase the incentive to take it off the property tax rolls. So if the compensation is even higher, regardless of what this report says about being over the percentage, I would support it. I think what the auditor is trying to talk about in their whole report, and this one is one where you've got to read the whole report because it's so complex, is how the 10% I disagree with is how do you presume that that piece of land was going to be developed and for what purpose? Commercial, residential, cabin. And that is the hard part of accounting for this. Now, easier with Vermilion because there was a plan in place. It was kind of moving forward. There were parcels drawn out, and you could tell what you were probably going to get. But in a place where there was nothing proposed, how do we know what that would have been? That's really hard to guess. And what type of development? I mean, Two Harbors wanted to propose an RV park. They wanted to develop that. It could have been something else. It could have been condos overlooking the lake. But they wanted this RV park. So they're the ones who opted for something a little less in terms of total revenue. So it's what they are saying is it's hard to guess, but they're going over the issues and saying that there are things that are unclear.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just want to be clear.
Final comments, Senator Bach, because we need to finish up at 2:45. Go ahead.
I just want to be clear that the RV park at Two Harbors that the city is building is a different project than the RV park that the DNR is proposing to build at Split Rock Lighthouse State Park. But I mean, members, I just raised this because the next bullet, every 5 years it's reappraised, it's being reappraised. And next year the PILT cost is going to go up by, I think, about $10 million for a biennium. And this committee is going to be asked to spend an additional $10 million next year because of bullet number two, because in places like the north shore of Lake Superior, that land is going up exponentially in value. And just want to kind of put everybody on notice that's already in the works. And Mr. Mueller can probably tell us what the real number is, but I think it's about $10 million of new spending next year in this committee. It's an open appropriation, so unless this committee reduces it, that's what it's going to be.
I think it'll go up.
Yeah. Ms. Chair and Senator Schotter, Senator Box mentioned it is an open appropriation, so as the appraisals go up, the payments automatically go up. It's not like the committee has to make an appropriation to meet that obligation. It can ratchet it down, but other than that, the money goes out the door.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mueller, I was just wondering if it's universally agreed to that the appraisals are going to go up.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhary, in the past history has shown yes, and because it's every 5 years, a lot of these appraisals have sort of skipped the bottom out and coming back up again. But it depends on the part of the state, I think mostly in farmland area and areas where Senator Bach is talking about, the appraisals haven't bottomed out as much as other parts of the state.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Miller, where did I see a spreadsheet that showed the PILT cost about $10 million higher in the next biennium?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, that was in the February forecast.
So we are anticipating about a $10 million increase.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, for the biennium, yes, I think it's about that.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Junger, why don't you see, and Mr. Noel, why don't you see if you can finish up here? That'd be great.
I just want to make one quick comment, though, in reference to
Mr. Noble.
As he well knows, there are those special properties, like Vermilion, and possibly the North Shore, where the legislature can make a determination that it has a significant value for whatever reason and enhance the PILT payment, as you did, for the land that would be acquired for Vermilion State Park. In fact, it's a doubling of the rate of the assessed value of that property. So that's clearly a policy choice that this legislature can make on any land anywhere.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Younger.
Just another comment in response to Senator Bach's comments. You know, this is why I said it's so difficult to evaluate PILT, because it's not clear what the purpose of PILT is and what it's designed to do. And I think in this case he's talking more about the an attempt to try to reimburse local governments for lost property taxes from some future development that may occur. In some cases it might be well known that it's going to occur, like with Lake Vermilion. You know, this comparison was only trying to address the lost property taxes for the taxes that were actually being assessed prior to acquisition. So it isn't trying to assess, to look at what those taxes might be for future development. Again, what is the purpose of PILT? My point in talking about the reappraisal of land every 5 years is this gap of 64% can change over that five-year period, depending on what land values are doing. So the PILT and the state land has retained the same value over 5 years, but private land, that land, if it had remained private, could have been increasing in value, and the taxes from it would have been increasing, or it could have been decreasing in value, and the taxes would have been decreasing, and that affects, in that five-year period, what the gap would be between PILT and property taxes on that land had it been retained in private hands. What we also found in looking at this specific type of PILT land is that counties were the main beneficiary of the difference between PILT and taxes, not the townships. The townships are probably not getting a fair shake. for this particular type of land, and you have to be very specific, it's acquired non-hunting land. The comments don't apply to other types of land. Townships, on average, are only getting 2.5% of the PILT. The counties are getting the remainder. Town taxes, as a percent of county town taxes statewide, are about 19% to 20%. So is that a fair apportionment of the PILT to townships? The reason this has occurred is that originally the PILT law said for this type of land, $3 per acre, there was no valuation formula, and 30 cents per acre for townships. That was bumped up to 5.11 and 51 cents for townships, but the townships don't get a share when it's calculated based on 0.75% of the value. The townships are not getting 10% as they would of the dollar value. They're not getting 10%, so their take out of this has decreased over time. Some of the issues we think the legislature should consider are, is PILT for acquired non-hunting lands too high? Again, what is the purpose of PILT? Is something that you need to think about when you're looking at these questions. Should townships get a greater share of PILT? Should school districts continue to receive PILT for acquired hunting lands? They don't get it for other types of property, presumably because back in 1979, the legislature said that determined that they didn't need it. And there are some, there is an argument that can be made for not giving school districts acquired hunting PILT. There are some counter arguments as well. And this is my last slide, and I'll just quickly go through this. For the most part, school district revenues, because of our school district funding formulas, school district revenues are not affected by the acquisition of land. You could argue, though, that it may impact school tax property tax rates, and that could affect voters' willingness to pass a referendum. And that, in turn, could affect school revenues, keeping in mind they get revenues from the state, they get revenues from property taxes. Can the acquisition of land affect tax rates for school districts? Well, it can for debt service levies. In fact, it may or may not, but it depends on the characteristics of the school district, but those can be affected. For operating referendum levies, it's much more complex because certain properties, if acquired by DNR, those properties are not taxed for operating referendum purposes. Ag non-homestead, for the most part, is not taxed for operating referendum purposes. Non-commercial seasonal recreation property is not taxed, as Senator Bach mentioned. A portion of ag homestead is not taxed. What is taxed is the house, the garage, and 1 acre on an ag homestead. That is taxed for operating referendum levy purposes. The rest of the farm, other farm buildings, and other land on an ag homestead are not taxed. So depending on what DNR acquires, it may or may not affect these the school districts. So it's a very complex area, and it also needs some greater definition by the legislature as to what are we trying to accomplish with PILT in these different areas.
Thank you, Mr. Youngers and Mr. Nobles. It's enlightening. I think we raised some questions as well as answered some questions, and we may have you back again sometime, may we not, Chairman?
Absolutely. To continue the discussion, Mr. Chair, we got a lot more to talk about in this topic. We do have to move on and during the meeting because we have other people, I'm sure, coming in the room. So thank you.
Go ahead, Senator Bach.
Mr. Chair,
quick comment?
Madam Chair, can we at another time schedule the department to respond to this? I mean, clearly the department, by the report, doesn't have adequate resources to manage what they currently have. And I think at some point we ought to get a response from them, how they feel about the auditor's findings. Doesn't have to be today, of course, but I just think it would be helpful.
Duly noted, Senator Bach.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a great idea. We'll make sure we do that.
With that, we'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Great.